The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Vinyl Me Please, the best damn record of the month club. And you listeners can go to joinvmp.com/lasertime and see how you can save $40 on a full year of badass records.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, home of the heavy sack beating. I am your host, Bob Mackey, and I'm someone else. And this is the Lasertime Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons, who is here with me as usual.
Henry Gilbert, and I'm full of piss and vinegar. Before it was only vinegar.
And who else?
Ratmaster 2000, Chris Antista.
Oh, I thought you were Hammer. And today's episode is Homer the Vigilante.
Okay, men, it's time to clean up this town.
Meaning what exactly?
You know, push people around, make ourselves feel big.
And this episode aired on January 6th, 1994, our first 94 episode. Listen, 94 is the year of so many great video games. Donkey Kong 94, Final Fantasy 6, God help me, Super Metroid, Mother 2 in Japan, known as Earthbound here. It's a great year for video games. I'm sorry, Chris, I just wanted to put that out there.
No.
Yeah,
Sonic
go ahead.
3.
Sonic 3, not good.
Donkey
Let's
Kong
move on.
3.
Also not good. Let's move on.
Hey, speaking of technology, sales for TV VCR combos are up 55% right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. At the box office, nobody can out the Mrs. Doubtfire, and a mysterious person viciously attacks gold medal contender figure skater Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, this
My
happened now.
Goodness, man. It's
And Happy New Year.
I think we're getting dangerously close to doing an episode of Talking Critic in the timeline, but because the Critic is about to premiere,
it's virtually defined by these years.
The Critic was canceled. There's a great article called "How the Critic Was Killed by Nancy Kerrigan," and it was that the attack on Nancy Kerrigan made that one of the most watched sporting events of all time, and ABC was like, nobody watches the Winter Olympics. We're going to put a brand new episode of The Critic on against the Winter Olympics. Mm. And it was like it set records for low ratings of first run entertainment.
I did a video a long time ago for the top video games of 1994, according to the U.S. box office, meaning Toy Story. Toy Story didn't make it in there. But I did a little montage at the beginning, and I did a joke that nobody gets where I just yelled 1990. It's a pennant in the background of a flashback of the movie Run, Ronnie, Run, the Mr. Show movie. And they just do a flashback. You remember 7 years ago? And there's just a pennant, small pennant in the background that just says 1994, the year of years.
Jesus. Well,
how prescient to hang something like that. It makes me laugh so much.
This is before social media. I feel like events like these were so outlandish and so memorable, they would stick with us for years. If some figure skater got their knee bashed in, it would be forgotten in a day. But this lived on for so long. It was part of the immortal Weird Al song Headline News.
Oh my God.
Which talked about
right.
Lorena Bobbitt, the kid who was caned in Singapore, a later Simpsons episode, and this
Michael,
thing exactly.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and there's a documentary about it. Nancy, and like everybody else is reliant on being invited on talk shows to talk about it because everybody's out of jail. And Nancy Kerrigan's like, I was the best at my sport, and I fucking hate that this defines me.
Yes. That does suck.
And it's also unfortunate that Tonya Harding likely did the planning with it. Like, it's hard to see it any other way. But she was like, it's unfortunate she was cast as like, and she's a terrible figure skater who had to hurt someone on her team to do better. Like, No, she was great. Mm-hmm. Like, she could do stuff other people couldn't do, like, that were feats of strength, but it also meant trying and sometimes failing.
I wish I knew that 30 yeah. for 30 about it. It's fucking fascinating. And I think bolstered, like, because they had just split up the Summer and Winter Olympics at that mm-hmm. point.
Oh,
it was
right,
like the, it was
right.
like the second or third time they'd done that. And I think that brought more attention to the Winter Olympics
oh, hell yeah.
than any qualified athlete would have done.
And I think the mastermind, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, of this plan, Jeff Galluli, would yes. just be a David Letterman punchline like Joey Buttafuoco. Yes. He would just say
hear
Jeff Galluli.
Jeff Galluli.
And it would just be, that would be, it's a funny name, and he just said it for no reason.
Ah, yeah. Galluli.
That 30 for 30 also point out something I never knew about figure skating until then, is that figure skating is bullshit because it's all judges. It's all up to the judges.
Yeah.
And judges come with their own prejudices, and that includes if you are an out figure skater, you might be judged for that. And they're like, this wasn't a manly enough performance.
Shouldn't it
by
be the other way
skaters.
Around? Or, if you're the sole not out figure skater.
Well, some figure skating judges are surprisingly not cool with gay people and are more very buttoned down and religious.
For 20 years, there were jokes in this. Ooh, not good from the Russian judges.
Well, there's also that. But then Tanya, too, had that thing of, like, they tried to make her girl. They talk in the
oh,
documentary
right,
about
thug.
Trying to make her girlier because she's like, well, if she looks too tough, then they'll think, like, she's not feminine enough and mm-hmm. they'll knock against her. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, there are too many factors into appealing to these, like, arbitrary rules and subjective opinions
that was,
of judges.
I know people are mad at us for kidding. That was a cool thing about the documentary that, like, they. It wasn't that they just came across one another. They'd been touring together for years.
They'd known each other.
They'd known each
time.
Other for a long time.
And The Simpsons did reference this when
it would be like
trick
me...
knee got attacked
oh,
by
right.
Mo in a mask.
It would be like me kicking
oh,
you
wow,
in the
yeah.
back because you wanted a Retronauts episode that I wanted to go on.
Exactly. Yes.
So this episode, Homer the Vigilante, I'm not sure
so
if we have
good.
A clip
I
of
love
this,
it.
But a lot of it is based on a really old movie. This is totally a John yeah. Swartzwelder pool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is the movie Raffles about a gentleman thief named AJ Raffles who leaves a calling card behind. He's a cat burglar.
So it's hard to find clips of this. This is from 1939?
39. It's played by David Niven.
David Niven.
Well, mm-hmm. and I've got more to say.
It's like his breakout role.
I think so.
So I wasn't able to like, it's, there are no clips of this online.
There's
for
no
the most
good
part.
Clips, I don't
think. But what I did find is why not get someone more qualified? So I don't want to rely on this ever again because there's not a lot of jobs involved with being on Talking Simpsons. Part of this is doing your own research, but like this was a little difficult. I wasn't that interested, so I thought, why don't I just default to good old Turner Classic Movies' Ben Mankiewicz.
First, tonight we've got David Niven in one of his first big starring roles. It's from 1939, Raffles. This was not David Niven's big screen debut. He started acting in movies 5 years earlier, mostly though in bit parts. But he gradually worked his way up through the credits, and with this film, at last, he was getting top billing, playing the title role as man about town, A.J. Raffles. He's a star cricket player, he's a hit with the ladies, and he's also an accomplished jewel thief.
I like to think of Ben Mankiewicz as a Michael Showalter character.
Well, but
don't you ever joke about Ben Mankiewicz. He's the only thing we have left after Robert Osborne passing.
Poor Robert Osborne. He is just the ultimate movie grandpa. All my movie grandpas are dying. It sucks.
And whoever that that woman who I love and hate on the weekends, just because I want her
she's
job.
She's too young to know about old movies.
I know. I want her job so bad. I want it so bad.
But so David Niven's performance as Raffles would also be the basis for a character he would play in The Pink Panther.
You're right.
Which is actually closer just in age to the character of Malloy in this episode. And I have a clip for that, too.
Do you?
Do you really have to leave this afternoon?
Yes.
Isn't this departure rather sudden?
Not at all. Why do you think so?
Well, I just thought that after last night that...
My leaving has nothing to do with last night.
Hasn't it?
And the music used is a lot more evocative of Pink Panther
oh,
as
yeah.
well.
It's a straight up Pink Panther themes mm-hmm. for it. But the reason they cast David Niven in that was because of Raffles. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be playing his Raffles type character who steals the Pink Panther, a jewel, mm-hmm. and he's being tracked down by the police. And the film is supposed to be a David Niven film. Mm-hmm. But they cast Peter Sellers in it, who steals every second he is on screen. And
that's all he does in every movie.
Niven never came. I don't believe Niven came back for the sequels. I think they were just Clouseau films at that point.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I rewatched. It was hard to even find a clip on YouTube that featured David Niven from the Pink Panther, because all the clips on YouTube are the funnier Peter Sellers scenes. Mm-hmm. And in the Peter Sellers film that starred Jeffrey Rush playing him, I remember in the scenes during the filming of the first Pink Panther that some person interviews him said, I hear you're stealing this movie from David Niven. He's like, oh, no, we're working together. And, but, I mean...
They're going to base a cartoon character after me that'll run on TNT for years to come.
Kids won't like it as much as Bugs Bunny.
It's no Anthony Aardvark.
Barf. All those MGM tunes suck.
Why'd you bring that up? Many wasted afternoons.
But, so, yeah, you look at David Niven in Pink Panther.
He looks a lot like Malloy.
Malloy is him.
It's just that Sam Neill, Grant from Jurassic Park,
who does a fantastic job in this episode.
He does. But he's not going for an impression. He's just playing himself.
And this is this is 6 months after Jurassic Park. I don't know if Jurassic Park was hot when they hired him for this. Maybe it was just breaking out into a huge movie. It was always going to be huge.
Yeah,
no matter what.
I've since seen. Obviously, Jurassic Park was my get woke movie. Like, oh my god, I love movies. That's all I love. And I discovered Sam Neill and stuff afterwards. So I imagine he had some small breakout role.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But he was much more prominent after Jurassic Park.
I mean, yeah, he wasn't. He was in films beforehand.
What I know about the Simpsons production at this cycle, I don't know what role would have launched Sam Neill into the role of Malloy.
You didn't see The Omen 3?
I did not.
It's a great movie. Bad movie.
I waited for 666. Huh.
I loved in the third Jurassic Park film, they tried to turn him into Indiana Jones. It's like, come on, man. Sam Neill's supposed to be just like a geek who hates children. Yeah, his character.
He was schlubby in 93.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a John Swartzwelder episode, and you know it is because Homer acts like a dog, which, as Swartzwelder has called Homer, as said of his way of writing Homer, is a dog that can say its own name. That is how he writes Homer.
Ah, that's great.
Dad, we've been robbed. Wake up! Our portable TV.
Go!
And my necklace.
Yeah, that's no big loss.
Homer, that necklace was a priceless Bouvier family heirloom.
Oh, you probably got a whole drawer full of them.
Well, yes, I do. But they're all heirlooms, too.
That's more visual, but I
just
love
the
big
ball of red pearls, whatever they are.
They're all family heirlooms, and I like the... I also like just the sound of them coming out of her neck. Yep.
Like just popping out.
I think they have to because that's referenced later.
Yeah.
That's true,
Just like the sound of pearls.
Marge sleeps with her jewelry that. On, I guess.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you guys, have you ever been robbed, like your house?
No.
No.
I have an interesting story.
No, I had my... This is going to sound so privileged, but I had my...
My summer house was broken into during the regatta.
I went to a camp based on hobbies, and I... immaculately put... I actually have the folder. I brought it back for the Marvel cards folder.
Ah, yes.
And it was... And my hobby is these Marvel cards. So I brought them, and then I went to lunch, and then they were all stolen. And it was like the most heartbroken... Oh. I've had shit stolen and lost stuff, but that was the most heartbroken I've ever been.
As a kid,
it was
my
prize thing at the time.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was very trusting too much of people who just said, oh, that your Super Soaker is really cool. Could you lend that to me? And nothing happened. And then by the end of the day, it was returned to me broken.
Aww.
And they're like, yeah, we smashed it. Who cared?
That's
so
sad.
And one time I went to where I had parked my car in front of my house back when I owned a car. And it had clearly, like, the seat was reclined and stuff was moved around. I was like, I don't think I left the doors unlocked, but somebody came in here and laid down in this car.
Weird.
Like, it was just... As far as I could tell, nothing was missing, but it was just this feeling of like, it's a massive invasion of my privacy. This car feels weird now.
To my credit, I don't own anything of value.
I'm looking around, Chris. I see at least $30 worth of Amiibo on your wall.
Yeah, someone sent me a bunch of Amiibos. You would have to know me and the value of Amiibos and get into this house. It would be very easy to find our Malloy.
And you're on like a fourth floor. That's a long way to go. Yep.
Well, someone did break into my house when I was in it, actually.
Oh.
And I blame my sister because at the time she was hanging out with some real bad seeds on the wrong side of the tracks.
So of course it was somebody you knew, not just
it
some
tends
random.
To be how it always
I think
is.
It's somebody that knew there was a person in a middle-class home possibly full of valuables they could steal from. But I was home. I was slightly hopped up on cold medicine. I was staying home from work because I had the flu.
Oh.
And I was
so wait, how old were you?
I was probably 18. Okay. I had to be 18 because I remember I was playing SSX, the PS2 launch game, while hopped up on DayQuil.
Stale fish, Christ grab.
And I love that song for Dot. I can never get over it. But I was playing it. I hear all these like banging around noises, and I'm like, what's happening in my house? My sister's at work. My parents are at work. What's going on? They're coming from upstairs. So I open the door to my parents' room, which is just a set of stairs up to a loft area or whatever. And I see a man at the top of the stairs. And I am in my clouded flu/cold medicine line of thinking. And I say, the first thing that comes out of my mouth, which is really stupid, is, do I know you? And the guy's like...
And the sitcom audience cracked up.
Yeah, I mean, I could hear the laughter in my head. But I think the guy said, yeah. And I was like, well, very well then. I closed the door. And then the gears start turning. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's a thief. And then, like... As I realize what's happening, he comes bounding down the stairs, like goes through my sister's room and out the window he came in. I also go through the same window and running with like socks on through the snow through the backyard. He's not even holding anything. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I chasing this guy? He's out of my house now. So then I call the police and it's fine. We got our locks changed. There was no problems after that. But that was kind of scary. Just like knowing a guy was in your house and he shouldn't have been there. It was just like, oh, man.
And I should say I broke into a ton of places. Not a lot of theft, though. It's more like what liquor you got.
It's more like squatting.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is my brush...
Wow.
We'll get into that sometime, but I had a lot of runaway experiences, for real.
Well, that was my brush with a B&E, and I came out clean.
Did you lose your stamp collection, though?
Oh, I'm not that much of a nerd.
It's a crime wave, baby.
I love that Nelson calls him to go ha-ha.
Yes.
It is the most extreme links to a ha-ha to this point, but there will be a more extreme one soon.
And I do like
that. Burger even took my stamp collection. You had a stamp collection?
Stamp collection!
Bart's pain is funny, but mine isn't.
That's my line
of
show.
That saxophone was my one creative outlet. It was the only way I could truly express myself.
Shh. Quiet, Lisa.
Almost
hey,
my line
Burglar
of show.
Left his calling card. You have just been robbed by the Springfield Cat Burglar. Cute.
Idly ho, neighborinos.
Cat talk. Rob, go help.
You folks got robbed, too. The burglar took my Shroud of Turin beach towels.
Wow, it's a crime wave.
There's like three line of the show candidates in there.
And that one conversation, it's great. I love the Bart's pain is funny, but mine isn't.
You know what, I'll just...
Lisa being callous.
We should do it more democratically
anyway.
Yeah. And like, can't talk, robbed, go hell.
Yeah, go hell.
Is the best.
That's the joke.
I'm very happy.
That's our line of the show jingle, everybody.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, do you have the clip of what was stolen from Skinner? Because I had several questions about this.
Well, I want to unpack a few things in that scene.
Oh, sure, sure.
That it said that the Cat Burglar was established in 1957, which is a good setup for how old he is. That
true,
been
true.
Doing it since 57. Mm-hmm. That Homer forgot that Homer should care more about that sax because they don't have an AC unit because he bought that sax for her 5 years earlier.
Oh, you're right.
Remember?
That's right. And
he should care more. And that
you should have had time to get an AC unit in the next years.
The Shroud of Turin beach towels feel it's a funny joke. It's a cute little joke, but. I always think of Catholics when I think of Shroud of Turin, which Ned is not a Catholic. Mm-hmm.
He definitely isn't. And, I mean, the joke in this episode in the beginning is Bart is sleeping with a television.
That's so funny.
And it's like, that's just me today. It's a tablet. I fall asleep watching things on a tablet every night. It's not even a joke anymore.
Every time I'm like, oh, I roll over on my girlfriend's phone. Oh, it's mine. Because they're both in the bed for
I just,
some
like,
reason.
Wake up tangled in headphones every morning.
Like, how could you put your phone anywhere but out of hand's reach, you have to have it.
You could never not have
it. An iPhone doesn't sell any other charging cord more than 2 inches, so it's got to be close to you.
Well, and my phone is my alarm clock, so if I put it farther away, when it goes off, I'm like, where's the damn phone? Turn on the alarm.
So I want to talk about the Norman Schwarzkopf collector
Storm
plates.
And Norman. I was hoping... I knew what he was referencing.
Oh, me too,
Principal Skinner's Storm and Norman collector plates. Funny.
It's another one where I went to Twitter because I get it.
I was so hoping it was a comic book character that I didn't know about.
You didn't know about Norman Schwarzkopf?
I did. I just wanted it to be not
more
bad.
Interesting. Yeah,
because
it
doesn't tell you that much. I don't think
it's
that
not the
gels with
joke.
Skinner very well.
It does.
It is. Like, Skinner is a boring guy, and Schwarzkopf is kind of the most boring military hero of recent memory. He won very easily winnable war.
Skinner's not pro-military. He's traumatized.
Hmm.
I mean, no, he would respect other people in uniform.
He's never done that specifically before.
We'll see more of that in season 100. I'm sorry,
Billy
episode 100.
The Clotosaurus.
Exactly. But so there's a joke here, and I get that Skinner is lame for having these, but yes. It's like they were stolen again. So I went to Twitter, and I was like, what does this joke mean, Twitter? Tell me. And there were some interesting solutions to this. There was... The joke is that they should have never been stolen in the first place, and they were stolen again. It is a very low-value item.
Yes.
The other interpretation was that they were stolen and then returned because the thief realized he could get nothing for them. But I am overthinking this joke. Please let me know in the comments what you think the interpretation is.
Like, I mean, when I think of Norman Schwarzkopf, who was what? Like the chief?
Well, he was the general during... He was the leading general during the Desert Storm.
Ugh.
And that he... So Desert Storm was such like a media-ized thing, and they're like, it's Storm of Norman. He's so cool. Like, I don't fucking care.
Like, he was so like boring and staunch.
Yes.
And the only thing I think of when I hear his name is the Mad Magazine cover, and someone out there is high-fiving me right now.
I think I had that cover, Chris.
It is so symbolic of the era, because he was a four-star general, and Levi's had introduced the buttonfly jeans.
I had this issue.
And he had a four-star buttonfly
hilarious.
On his Desert Storm fatigue.
Oh, my God. That's when I started reading, Matt, late 80s.
It was.
So, yeah.
That's when I started as well, in the
I
early
have
80s.
One last theory about those commemorative plates, why they've been stolen again. So he was sold to a degree, like so they would have made stuff like those. But I think they were stolen again because he's a principal and he's being pranked by kids. So the first time they were stolen was by Jimbo.
I want to say we should move on, but this is exactly what the show is
that's
for.
That's what we're here for. I mean, John Swartzwelder, if you're listening, please let us know. But yeah,
reach out. And,
Barney wakes up naked with everything stolen, which makes me think, like, so did Malloy undress him, or was he asleep nude?
I think he took off his clothes on a bender and just passed out on the floor.
I mean, it's possible.
The joke is that
he's
been robbed and doesn't notice.
I want to say this could be the last time we see his crappy apartment. I feel like we're seeing less and less of it as he becomes less of a character, more of just a joke that's inserted.
It's true.
Yeah.
I feel like even in his recovering alcoholism episode, you don't see too much of the inside of his place.
You want some more Simpson nerdery? Well,
I love Homer's curse you magic beans. Yeah. That's another of my favorite lines.
It was a little too far, but this is if you're a Simpsons nerd.
Yeah, I got this down.
Are you sitting down? Good. I wish to report a robbery.
A robbery, right. Thanks for the report. It's another one, Lou. 723 Evergreen Terrace.
No. Yeah.
Is it the second time the address is wrong?
What was the first time they solidified this as 742?
742 was...
Snake's address.
No, all right, so 742 was Snake's address. It was Marge and Chains. Mm-hmm. When they ship the juicer to Homer...
Right, that's right.
It was 742 was the address.
Now
so.
it's 24, 724,
it's
he
742.
Said? What did Wiggum say, 24?
He said 23.
Yeah,
23. This 23. was 723, and I think it's just they forgot it.
That's the other side of the fucking street, man.
I feel like Oakley and Weinstein would never let this happen again. Remember, it's 742.
742.
I'm going to keep my eyes out for this to be the last time they get the address wrong. Yeah. I think it will be.
I do love their wrong conclusions. Like, move the pins around. Oh, it's pointing right here.
Almost looks like an error.
And I think we've come to the conclusion what my favorite kind of episode is. It's when all of Springfield is panicking.
Yes.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Because then you get these little moments where characters can shine like Frink.
Well, as you can see, when the burglar trips the alarm, the house raises from its foundations and runs down the street and around the corner to safety. Well, the real humans won't won't burn quite so fast in there.
And that's a little twister mouth for you.
Oh, you're right.
In that
shot. A mini twister.
And like, I know now from syndication, that joke is paid off later.
Yeah.
And they cut
With the running house.
The running house, because it follows into the laser sequence, which is cut in most of the syndication versions I've seen, because it's so long to
it's
make
something
two
they
jokes.
Can cut without affecting the plot at all.
But when I think of how crazy the show has gotten, like the test of him making a miniature running house, that's one thing, but that They built them for real, and Bart activates one.
I'm just thinking of how it would take to install that under your foundation.
He built a fake family that could catch on fire and fall out of the house.
Yeah, you have to hope that the house was empty when Bart activated it, or he killed all the people in that house.
I do like the idea of the house running away, possibly with the burglar still inside.
Yeah, or with the family at work. Where's my house? And then it defended itself.
Also, the second Wiggum is there with that dog, you know he's going to be attacked by it.
Just
dog.
Like mommy, mama.
And that Kent is just as bad in this. Like Kent runs the news to terrify people.
Would you say it's time to panic?
Yes, I would.
Yes, sir. That guy, I didn't get him at all.
Professor,
but he's
I love that.
He's
I love
so
the
great. Yes, I would. But it's time to meet Malloy. I think.
It's the cat burglar. Please don't kill me.
Abe, can I borrow your ointment?
Oh, it's you, Malloy. All right. But this time, clean off the applicator.
They're talking about butt cream, everybody. And butt cream.
He'll slash you here. And Samuel, baby.
Also, Apu is super aggro on this week, shooting at people for on top
Thank
of
you, go to hell.
Though he's been robbed so many times before that I can see this pushing him over the
edge.
It's
about time he starts firing back.
I mean, the only time this gets better for me is... It's this season, right? The Comet episode?
Yeah, season six.
I love it when all of Springfield goes insane.
Yeah. Very so Merkin-y. Anything with just the town hysteria, I feel like I love it. That's his.
And they shouldn't even be scared of being robbed again because they already have been. And
exactly.
That's when we get one of my favorite GIF moments I used recently of Homer thinking over jug music. Yes.
It's so good.
What's the point of all these precautions? I've already lost the only thing that matters to me.
Oh, Lisa, stop pining for your saxophone. I got you another instrument.
What is jug?
Wee! Whoa! Hill. Lisa, never, ever stop in the middle of a hoedown.
And Homer immediately just turns into a hillbilly, like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love the stepping back and forth while he's scratching his chin. Yeah.
The stern look on his face while Lisa looks pissed as fuck.
It's a great act break joke to go out on.
There are a few things in this world I love more than Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. So anybody playing the jug?
I've used a gif of the Homer thinking to jug music as me trying to think of a subtweet to do to somebody.
Or a fucking sub-headline.
That too.
So Act 2 opens in the little scene of Ned's rumpus room. The bar and everything.
You got a lawsuit on your hands.
Uh-oh.
But this would have been my line of the show, but I'm willing to default to a majority here, just because I love panicky Springfield people.
Yes. I do love the I'm someone else line.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, neighbors. Since the police can't seem to get off their dufferoonies to do something about this burglarino, I think it's time we start our own neighborhood watch. A Rooney.
Yes!
Who should lead the group?
You!
Yeah! Flanders! Flanders! Flanders!
I don't really have very much experience, but I'll be...
Someone else!
Yes! Someone else! Someone else! Someone else!
I'm someone else!
He's right!
That is so great. Oh, just beautiful. I love the fickleness. They just want a quick solution with no problems that are evident at all.
Ned's momentary pausing just to accept, he is accepting, is enough for them to go like, we lost trust here. Then Homer...
He's right!
Homer is my favorite yelling person in the mob.
Yeah, let's
go get some cider!
I mean, I think Moe's violent tendencies really come out the most. He's slowly turning into more and more of a dirtbag.
Yes.
I think we see a lot of that in this episode.
And that Homer describes himself as something all mobs love. Like, we don't need a thinker, we need a doer, someone who will act without considering the consequences.
An outsider, yeah.
Yeah, an outsider. Run it like a business. And then came a joke that I was glad was on the DVD that was never on my VHS because they cut it for... at least, I swear to God, the gun scene was not...
Really?
Oh, Bart with the gun was not on there. They cut before showing Bart with the gun.
I remember that
DVD.
One.
Yeah, on the DVD, Bart with the gun is on there.
Okay,
but
syndication.
In the first run that I taped, my first run version did not have Bart with
the
gun.
It's funny, on the DVD they said they had to fight for that, so maybe the first airing did not have it, and they put in subsequent airings.
Hmm.
I don't think the guns are a good idea.
Bart! We're responsible adults. And if a group of responsible adults can handle firearms in a responsible way...
Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Me again.
Sorry.
Yeah, that reveal of Bart is very great.
So great.
Eventually, everyone gets into different costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I just love...
It's so weird, because Barney's just dressed like someone at the Gulp and Blow.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Gulp and Blow employee. Like, Apu is dressed as a Sikh, I think. Yeah, yeah. I thought he was a Hindu.
That's true.
Yeah.
Are you saying they don't understand Indian culture and made a joke?
They might
this
not.
This is the portion of the show where Chris pretends to know the difference.
Oh, there is a difference. And Skinner is dressed as like a Green Beret, literally wearing a Green Beret. And
he is a Green Beret. He beat up those lawyers from Disney
right.
and identified as a Green Beret.
And
so.
Mo is like a World War One, what do you call that? A
Kaiser helmet.
A Kriegermeister.
Or whatever,
yes,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting gang, though now it is... they immediately fall into violence, as with all people who just want to protect their neighborhood.
Yeah.
In a post-George Zimmerman world, this is less funny.
Captain America said it. Everyone who starts a war before it starts, innocent people get hurt.
Yeah.
Every time.
And what is Homer dressed as? I really can't tell. He's got this weird like fisherman's hat on and just a tan out like UPS driver outfit.
I
thought I found it familiar.
It's like a literal brown shirt, but it's more of a tan shirt.
I think I'm just thinking of Bruce Dern from The Birds.
Well, I think of dudes wearing that hat in the jungle, like in some jungle lore. But I can't identify
or
commenters have
if
at
if you're
it.
Banging your ex-wife's adopted Asian daughter and you're Woody Allen.
Ew.
Is that what he does?
Okay. He just wears that hat when he does
it. Fisherman hat. Okay. That's where the Pits and Vinegar line comes in, where Abe wants to do it and he can't.
It's
they barely use it as a story point, but they're like, we don't want your help, Abe. You're old and useless.
Established three times, so if there is a rule of threes,
yes.
that the elderly are ignored despite them wanting to help.
And I mean,
he's proud that he racistly ran out to the Irish of Springfield.
What a fine job you did.
One of the darkest jokes that I can remember, just thinking, like, what is the darkest Simpsons joke? It's Abe saying, though, like, this tickling me is a form of abuse.
Form of abuse.
Yeah, like, it's like, that's just a really, like, just starkly dark joke.
Yeah, it is. And but
we never thought of it because it would never occur to you to tickle an old person.
And tell them that you're so useless, aren't you?
Disgusting.
Yeah.
The Simpsons will be right back.
What up, Talking Simpsons listeners? I'm assuming right now, if you have gotten all the references in this episode, you are a classy, classic media savvy person like me. And if you are, you might enjoy Vinyl Me Please, the best damn record club. You can go to joinvmp.com/lasertime and see how you can save $40 on getting a record delivered to you every single month. If you're like me, I'm kind of getting into vinyl a little bit. Obviously, it also feeds into my little collector's mentality, and it's really cool to discover not only old stuff, but new stuff through a Record of the Month Club at a very inexpensive value. Vinyl Me Please features one album that is essential to the modern vinyl collection and sends it to thousands of their members worldwide. And better still, each record comes with exclusive features you won't get anywhere else, like bonus tracks, inserts, exclusive arts, new packaging, and even printable cocktail recipes to pair with your listening experience. This month's record is Fiona Apple's breakthrough debut, Tidal, from 1996, in a remastered double LP with exclusive art, 12-page lyric booklet, and gatefold jacket. I want to call it a guilty pleasure of mine, but hey, man, Criminal's just a good song. That is on this album, baby. But guess what? If you don't like the record of the month that month, you can swap it out for something Vinyl Me Please has previously released in their archives, which just so happens to include... a double red pressing of Gorilla's Demon Days, Weezer's Pinkerton, My Morning Jacket, The Fugees, and a whole lot more. There are dozens to choose from. No contracts, no hidden fees, no extra charges, and top-notch customer service can get you whatever you need as soon as humanly possible. That's Vinyl Me Please, and you can go to joinvmp.com/lasertime right now and see how you can save up to $40 on a bunch of cool new albums. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
I had a slam banging weekend, saw a ton of people, old GR friends, Charlie and Cherry. That was
nice.
Like, I didn't really invite Charlie over as much as he said, we paid for a babysitter and we're going to do shit.
Right.
But it's like, we have one night, we're forcing ourselves.
Oh, yeah,
somebody.
I would absolutely.
Thank God you did.
Whose house is open? Because I'm going to be in it very soon.
It really brought me back to like, who moved out right away? Man, let's go over there. What is he doing? Let's all meet over at his house, whether he likes it or not.
I lived in a house towards the end of my Illinois run where it was like, yeah, just come over whenever. And then it was, oh, good. I'm glad there's always a party here. I would like come out of my room and be like, there's 50 people here. Mm. I don't know most of them. And like, And then there's one point cops show up because they're like, yeah, we got a report. I'm like, from who? I couldn't hit a neighbor's house with a football. But then they're like, we heard there's a report of underage drinking. And I'm like, no. Literally everybody get out of my house right now.
I know we had a dumb... The cops can't say anything if you have a sign in your door that says no one drinking under 21. Like, that is, there's no way that's the law.
That's
like,
not
that
the
I can
law.
Just, I can Mario paint out a picture that says no one under 21. I'm under 21.
Yeah.
Like, that is impossible. And the picture
no,
was my friend in like full balaclava and Kevlar holding a shotgun to my head as I presented my ID. Someday I want to find that picture. It was great. Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
But of course they go to Herman's shop to get these things. Like, if Herman didn't exist before this episode, they'd have made him up for this.
Yeah, that's a good... Because a very rare appearance from
he's
Herman.
He's used tactically. I mean, he's used in the Pulp Fiction parody, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he'd be in the Falling Down parody if they made one.
He's a Schwartz Welder character.
He really is, yeah.
His burger doesn't look anything like the pictures.
I mean, Schwartz Welder, I believe, wrote the episode, the Bart's War episode. Or
Bart
whatever,
the General?
Bart the General. And that... I think a dark side of Schwartzwelder is Herman, just the guy who wants to hunker down with his guns.
Yeah.
But he also wrote The Cartridge Family, and just like the scene in this, it shows that guns are bad in the hands of the wrong people, like Homer and Moe and Barney.
And Herman, who, like, the second Homer says, like, I'm part of a neighborhood watch group, I'm like, well, then all can be trusted, and shows him an awesome missile. And it's just weird that this is like this is a very specific Doctor Strangelove reference, even though the last episode title is a very specific Doctor Strangelove reference with no references in the cartoon.
I credit Oakley and Weinstein. I think they are the most interested in the Strangelove parodies.
Yeah, and to their credit, that scene, it's Slim Pickens riding the
greatest.
The bomb, but even in the cartoon, it's matted in the same way. Like, there's the same amount of shadow on that sequence with Homer riding the bomb.
It's magical. I love it. This is what caused me to watch Doctor Strangelove, I think, because and Doctor Strangelove is one of my all-time favorite movies ever.
It's
if
so
you
good.
Think Stanley Kubrick can't do comedy, he is a master. He was a master of comedy. He
it's
just
ridiculous.
Didn't do many other comedies after Strangelove.
It's,
you know?
Again, with Peter Sellers, multiple roles.
And I think it took me maybe 2 or 3 viewings to realize, like, oh, that's one guy playing these different people.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
I didn't realize he was the he was like the Fey, like, French officer and the president.
Yeah, he was in London. He was a British
that's
officer
right.
at the fort. Then he was the President Muffley, and then he was Strangelove. And he was originally going to be a guy in the play, and he was going to be Slim Pickens' part, but he just couldn't do it. Like, this was also from the Jeffrey Rush thing of just like, I can't do a
and
Southern.
Just, but the beautiful thing I want to point out. Because I just watched The Side Hackers, which has a lot of Patton references, which because that had 4 stars on my TV guide, I watched it all the time, despite not loving it.
No.
George C. Scott is so fucking funny in this movie, and he's not a funny person. You know in person he's not funny, of Al My Groin fame. That's why it's funny to see him hit...
When you stick your hand in a pile of goo.
Yeah, that he's... Oh, he's so good in Doctor Strangelove. He's perfect. It's the same way like Robert Stack is perfect in Airplane. He's a serious actor.
And I think... I could be remembering this wrong, but Kubrick intentionally told him to like play it up. We won't use these takes. Just have fun with it. And he used all the takes that George Scott was just going crazy in.
That is the story, but he's so awesome there.
Yeah,
like,
it's so great.
The Ruski, and they can't think of something like this. And
Krusty would basically play him in Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming.
That's true. Yeah, he's the same... I cannot suggest Strangelove enough. Mm-hmm. It's so great. And that Slim Pickens was playing it straight, too, that they said, as King Kong was his character's name.
I don't know Slim Pickens from anything other than this and Blazing Saddles.
Well, he was just a guy who was in dozens of Westerns. Yeah. He's like, you're the Western character actor. That's why they cast
him. But he's the
too.
Embodiment of that archetype for me.
Totally. He's the, like, rich Texan kind of guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But
I
also
love him.
Think because he is that guy, and... James Earl Jones in that movie, a young James Earl Jones, is one of the pilots.
That. In the plane, yeah.
Yes, I think he's probably one of the only people still alive from that film.
He has to be, yeah.
And that originally in that film, it ended with a pie fight in the war room, which they cut.
It's on YouTube. It's so great.
Because there's a joke of the president going down and getting shot, and they're like, well, this isn't so funny after the assassination of Kennedy months earlier. Mm.
But here's a Dr. Strange reference, which leads into another thing.
G Krebs.
Hey, see this sign?
So that was an atomic bomb built to be dropped on beatniks, and Homer says, take that, Maynard G. Krebs, which is Bob Denver Gilligan's character on Dobie Gillis, who was the model for Shaggy on Scooby-Doo.
That's true. And
which wasn't a real beatnik. He was a parody of beatniks.
He's not, but like the last remnant you have of beatniks from the 50s is Shaggy, who looks the same in 2017.
You gotta say, watch the Roger Corman movie Bucket of Blood. It is a movie of that era that is a horror movie with beatniks in it. It's a beatnik based horror movie. It is a Roger Corman movie, so it's not that great.
All
but it's
starring
a lot of fun.
Ned's parents and their friends.
Yes, and you hear a lot of bad beat poetry. That's parodied in this episode.
I gotta say, I think the Ratmaster 2000, it's funny in a way, but it was a lame joke.
It's
that was
a very lame joke.
Yeah, I was like, why do people think he's Hammer? He's a big fat white guy.
Yeah, they wouldn't. And Hammer wasn't cool to think of in 93.
No, not 93.
Just watching, it's like, so the writers don't like this music and think fans of it are so undiscerning.
Maybe that's it.
They could mistake it for anything
else.
They
have boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Bert, give me that megaphone here.
It's not just a megaphone, Dad. It's a Ratmaster 2000.
Never mind the commercials. Just give it to me.
I do like
I've got to whip this neighborhood into shape. Move along there.
It's Hammer.
Return to your homes and places of businesses.
I was capturing this in front of our other Laser Time team, and like with no sound, it's still hilarious to look at.
Because
that motorcycle sidecar is like, that just doesn't exist.
And
whatever
dancing is really funny
too. So,
it's great animation of them. They're chasing after him, but also dancing.
Yeah, this is
same
a Jim Reardon episode, by the way.
At the same speed, and like I just fucking obsessing over the idea of like Phil Hartman characters standing around not saying anything. They just designed all new characters for the sequence, and they all look like they're ripped from Do the Bartman. I couldn't confirm that, but they're very evocative of the era, more so than any other resident of Springfield.
I love that they immediately embrace Jimbo. Instead, they hurt innocent people, but when they find somebody who actually is a hoodlum, they embrace him
because he idolizes them.
Hey, you're that drunken posse. Wow. Huh. Can I join you?
I don't know. Can you swing a sack of doorknobs?
Can I?
You're in. Here's the sack.
But you gotta supply your own knobs.
My line of the show.
I do love the mission statement of the vigilante group. Push people around, make ourselves feel big.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so then came a reference that I didn't ever know was a reference until now from doing the research, is that so at the dinner table where they're explaining what they do, and Lisa says, who will police the police?
Who will watch the Watchmen?
Homer says, and as for your grandma, or like your car flipped over, and as for your grandma, she shouldn't have mouthed off like that. That's a funny line as it is, but it is the plot of a Flannery O'Connor short story.
A very dark one.
A very dark one called A Good Man is Hard to Find. The short version is a family, including their horrible grandmother, who's very annoying. They go on a trip. She smuggles her cat into the car. The cat jumps out of nowhere. They crash the car, and the car stops to help them.
It's a hearse, I believe.
It is a hearse.
Yeah.
And guys get out, and they realize it is this guy called the Misfit who has been murdering people all around town. And the grandma says, oh, my God, you're the Misfit. And then he says, well, she... Now I know she knows it's me, so I have to kill all of you. And the story ends with the entire family, including children, taken to the woods and murdered.
It is a great short story. Spoilers, they all die.
A good man is hard to find.
See, I couldn't. One of my favorite lines was just them going about their vigilante business.
No burning leaves without a permit.
I got one.
Too late.
I got one.
It's you see that with a. Awful, corrupt regimes like, I can't do this long. Too late! Or, you can't fly over here. Yes, we can. You can't bring a computer.
Well, we already blew up this thing. You did it. Sorry. Too late. You're in jail. Too late. And I like that Homer self-identifies as a mob.
It's
like,
a bully.
The mob is doing it. Yeah. He says, the mob has many other plans, Lisa. Like,
this is one of my favorite lines when he's on Smart Line with Kent Brockman.
I love
Smart
this whole line. Sequence.
Oh, it's great.
It's so really good.
Mr. Simpson, how do you respond to the charge that petty vandalism, such as graffiti, is down 80%? While heavy sack beatings are up a shocking 900%.
Oh, people can come up with statistics to prove anything, Kent. 40% of all people know that.
I see. Well, what do you say to the accusation that your group has been causing more crimes than it's been preventing?
Oh, Kent, I'd be lying if I said my men weren't committing crimes.
Ha! Huh? Touché.
Perfect beat. It's great. I mean, I don't care much for the 40 joke. I feel like it's one of those what's the number for 911 style jokes.
That, so, yeah. I do just because I'm an avid watcher of shitty pundits. And like there's, let's just say, some guy with a Greek last name. That's also Milo. It's just fact. Here's a statistic I'm pulling out of my ass that doesn't apply to what I'm talking about, but you can't fact check it on the air, therefore it's true.
You can't stop this entire conversation to fact check
it. We can do it afterwards, but by then the damage is done.
Look at the slices of this pie chart.
And, and Kent Brockman's just like, yeah, I just got steamrolled. Touché. I got steamrolled by this dumb fact that doesn't apply.
It's true, but it just works in a post-fact world. But I just love the saying of like, I'd be lying. That is my line.
I mean,
of the show.
We're all writers, and like, I've done it for years. I can take facts and make them sound any way I want, and I can phrase them in a certain way where they're inarguable.
But this whole smart line sequence is
it's so good.
It
there's
one
even
of my
more
favorites
of it
ever.
Because I love this.
Well, it looks like we have our first caller, and I mean ever, because this is not a call-in show. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Kent. Hello, Homer. My arch nemesis.
Yellow.
You do realize who this is?
Marge?
No, Homer, I'm not your wife. Although, I do enjoy her pearls. As a matter of fact, I'm holding them right now. Listen.
Why, you monster! And you have my daughter's saxophone, too!
Homer! Homer! That's our stage manager!
Oh, poor guy. You know, Homer's yellow. I remember that from the Simpsons arcade game. That's what Homer is saying on his little profile screen. Yellow.
I said yellow on phones many times because Homer showed me to.
I said embrace nothingness, which is Lisa's catchphrase from the arcade game.
And then Homer even tries to throw the commercial break, but...
We'll be right back.
I get to say that.
But Malloy announces he's going to steal the world's largest cubic zirconia, which, if you don't get the joke, cubic zirconias are man-made.
Yeah.
They are synthetic false diamonds, and that's also why they...
The opposite of precious earth stones.
Yes, while they are pretty, they have much less worth because anyone can make them. And so there is no world's largest one. You make it as big as you can, and then someone can make a bigger one.
I feel like the early 90s were a good time for this because I remember watching a lot of QVC, Quality Value Channel, growing up, and they would always have Diamondique.
Diamondique.
Yes. It was another synthetic diamond. I don't know if people still care about synthetic diamonds.
Well,
you should never buy a real diamond, by the way. Yeah. That industry is fucked up beyond belief.
I'd rather get something fake and somebody says,
well,
that's not a real diamond.
Almost worthless.
Yes. It's like, how many fingers were cut off because this person didn't deliver the diamond fast enough?
Blood diamonds are a real thing. De Beers doesn't want you to know about them, but they're a real deal. I would rather have somebody say, like, yeah, this is fake. You can't even cut glass. Like, yeah, no children died for this. I think buying jewelry is stupid anyway, personally. But that's maybe just because I don't like the feel of things on my fingers.
Or my neck.
No way. But
are old people useless?
Ton, we want to help you catch that plug ugly egg.
Ted, the best way for you to help is to set a good example. Just stand around and don't steal anything.
They immediately steal
something. We're on a break. I love how AP uses the term yeg, which is a old-timey term for a safecracker or a burglar, a yegman. Y-E-G-G, yeg.
I wonder if that is either... I mean, that could definitely
totally
be Schwarzwalder.
Yeah.
That could be O-N-S, O-N-W as well.
I'm pretty sure yeg shows up in a Schwarzwalder book at some point.
It's just... I don't know. I want to show you later in the show how you can... I give the Simpsons writers a lot of credit for having all these weird old-timey words, but I want to show you where they might have gotten them from.
But the then we have a Dragnet reference like two episodes later. Yeah.
Any sign of the burglar yet?
He'll show.
How's that?
It's his job.
How's that?
He's a burglar.
Just nodding for a third.
I feel, again, if I didn't say it in the last episode, I feel fortunate enough to get this. Because Dragnet, in terms of pop culture in 94, was one of the most successful things ever invented by human beings.
It ran for a long time.
It started in radio. Yeah. It has multiple television variations, a full-length, feature-length movie starring Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd.
A classic rap.
Yes. That we just
City of Crime.
Yeah.
And this is when we found out Homer's canonical age to this point.
Yeah.
He is 36. He says 36 years ago, someone gave birth to...
I was going to say that, Chris. You are officially now older than Homer Simpson.
That's really weird.
Well, as Marge... Canonically, it actually works both ways, that Marge will later correct Homer that he's 38.
Right.
So Homer just might not... Like, Homer is stupid enough to have his age wrong, so he might actually be 38, but...
Well,
at least...
if every episode of The Simpsons is a day, that it all...
Oh, Homer actually died in the first episode, and this is all a dream. I read that on the internet. And I think, for as bad as the Kill the Alligator and Run episode is, it cemented Homer's official age from that point on as 42, which feels like a much better age for him than 36. As I'm speaking as a 34-year-old
man.
Yeah,
you want to think that now.
Yeah.
Well,
but it was an unqualified parent who's your age right now, three kids.
I don't want this.
Homer makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's true. I would be drinking quite a lot, even with teens.
TV would be your best friend.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be asleep at the switch.
I wasn't asleep. I was drunk.
I believe you, Dad.
So of all the crimes Homer commits, he gets drunk with minors.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah,
it's chugging contest.
Yeah.
And I don't believe you have it, but I do love the line of Jimbo so much of like, I don't believe in nothing no more. I'm going to law school.
No.
Which Jimbo doesn't do.
If I haven't told you my dad is a lawyer, his brother's a lawyer, the family are lawyers, they all quit that profession and kind of told me not to do it. And conversely, all the people I grew up with went to law school in their mid-30s. Just what the fuck else are you supposed to do? You get a loan, you go to law school.
I will take on six figures of debt to be a lawyer, maybe.
That's exactly what several of my friends
law school is very expensive.
Mm-hmm. I also like that Barney was part of the mob and even saying, go on, Simpson, as he leaves his house. Yeah. Like, he's in front of his home.
Yeah, another old-timey reference when Grandpa makes his way into the house covered in
shit. Oh, I love
shit.
All of this.
Oh, Grandpa, they pelted you too?
No, actually, I fell down as a big boy. Son, I've come to help you. I know who the cat burglar is.
What?
Who? Huh? What?
Well, well, well. Before I was too old, and no one wanted my help. Suddenly, look who comes to old Grandpa. Wait, where are you going? Come back, I'll tell you. He was right under my nose the whole time. He lives in my retirement home. His name is Malloy.
There's so many great things about
sneakers for sneaking. And unlike most retired people, he had the world's largest cubic zirconium on his coffee table.
There's so many great things about this scene. The big boy, if I have to say it, only because I saw 700 local news pieces about how the last big boy is closing.
Oh, I've eaten several big boys in my life.
It's a big boy is... marked by what's essentially Lard Lad. It is a giant, fat mascot that has a statue in front of every restaurant.
Based on an actual big boy.
Yeah. Yes. But he looks exactly like Lard Lad, except he's not holding a donut or anything.
He's holding like a platter, right?
Yeah.
I think he is.
In some of them, but sometimes he's just doing like a fucking shuriken in the air. And I just love when he's doing that. That joke works visually because of how fast the camera pans out to show the family was walking away.
Yes,
and it's a little thing, but it's like, yeah, that's why you couldn't do it with live action. You wouldn't be able to hide that joke from people.
That is so great. They just walking away. Mm-hmm. I feel like his whole explanation scene is a parody of Matlock of just like,
I'll explain everything.
It's his beloved Matlock.
And he could have just said the last thing first. Like, oh, he had the thing that was stolen, and that's how I found out. Like, but it's like, I put the clues together.
But again, it all gets even better for Chris personally. because it relies more on Springfield. Springfield, the residents of Springfield doing the right thing,
yeah,
which they can't possibly do.
No.
So, Mr. Malloy, it seems that the cat has been caught by the very person that was trying to catch him.
Oh, ironic.
Homer, old chap, well done. If anyone was going to catch me, I'm glad it was you.
Actually, it wasn't me. It was my dad, Grandpa. Thanks, son. So you see, old people aren't so useless after all. Malloy's old, and he outsmarted the lot of you. And I'm even older, and I outsmarted him.
Shut up.
I've had my moment.
It's immediately taken. He gets like 5 seconds to gloat, and it's taken away from him.
And yeah, Moe's my favorite mob member all the time.
So just like in the Pink Panther, he steals a valuable gem. And but also in the Pink Panther, he is intentionally caught to escape later. Like, and so he is totally Niven from the Pink Panther.
But there's the misdirect of like him apologizing to everyone, and Wiggum really coming as the buzzkill.
As a kid, I really did think they were going to let him go.
Me too.
We did almost miss that that Selma has a lock, of Richard Dean Anderson hair. Yeah. Who knows how she got it?
I like that she keeps that ball the same like Marge's ball of Bouvier heirlooms. The Bouvier is like to keep things in balls.
But Selma is the gay one of the twins, correct?
No, Patty.
Patty, oh yeah, right. Sorry.
And I collect celery that has been in MacGruber's ass. Exclusively. Watch that movie, people.
That
it's
movie.
Fucking great.
It's good
but Wiggum comes in to be a buzzkill.
And although I have stolen your material goods, let me assure
you... Dad, you got it back, just like you said you would.
I sincerely regret any inconvenience I may have caused. And although I have stolen your material goods, let me assure you that your dear town has stolen my heart.
Aww. Oh, he's so charming.
Let's let him go!
Yeah! Oh, sorry, folks. Gee, I really hate to spoil this little love-in, but Mr. Malloy broke the law. And when you break the law, you gotta go to jail.
That reminds me, here's your monthly kickback.
You couldn't have picked a worse time.
I do feel like that is Merkin going against the of-the-time sitcom convention of everyone says, and the episode ends, and it's all resolved.
Yes.
Like very Full Housey, which was still on at the air at this time.
Barney, let's let him go.
Let's
listen to Barney.
Go.
Yeah, that's what should happen.
I just love how he says that. Let's let him go.
It almost sounds like Pee-wee Herman in the tequila bar.
And Wiggum still takes the kickback and puts it in his shirt. Like, he's like, well, it's embarrassing, but I still keep this
money. I still
have
to take my bribe. And then we roll into...
And Homer goes to the jail cell just to mock him.
Let's hear that.
Suppose you're wondering where I hid all the millions of dollars that I stole over the years.
Shut up!
Wait a minute. Maybe we should hear him out. Where'd you hide the loot, Malloy?
It's buried right here in Springfield, under a big T.
No kidding.
Big T, huh?
Well, I guess I'll be going to my home now and sleep.
Yeah, me too. I will also go home.
Or sleep.
This is so fucking... I don't know why I love this so much.
I love this sequence.
I mean,
it's indulgent to the extreme.
Yeah.
But
I do kind of refuse to watch It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh my god, really?
It seems like a 3+ hour comedy be unbearable.
It is unbearable, but like, you know, one of my favorite comedies the last couple of years, this is the end.
I see.
And it's
you know, it's kind of similar.
It's not amazing, but it's just like it has a ton of funny people in for 4 seconds who get killed or like just show up for a second and do something funny and leave.
Well, I will say that I have seen the 2001 movie Rat Race, which ends with a what I call a Smash Mouth Ex Machina to wrap up the story. It is the only time in a movie you'll hear the line of dialogue, "Wow, Smash Mouth!" That will never happen again, so this movie can never top Rat Race.
There's a scene in Rat Race where John Lovitz makes his daughter shit out a van window, and she's screaming at the top of her lungs while they fly down the street, and like, that is... undeniably funny
There's
for this terrible film.
Maybe 10 good minutes of Rat Race. Yes. But the Smash Mouth finale, nothing can talk.
Mad World. It's four mads.
Four mads.
And it is... Everybody is dead.
Even the...
everybody.
I mean, they were like... The Three Stooges were there dying on screen.
Yes.
They're dying on screen.
Yeah.
Jonathan Winters is in it.
W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields is in it. Jimmy Durante is dying on screen.
Don Knotts.
Don Knotts is in it. Not credited in the fucking trailer. He was a surprise.
Wow.
Ethel Merman, Red Skelton.
It's crazy. So again, if these names don't ring a bell, duh. But like, it was every famous comedian in this giant, long... overly indulgent
all
comedy.
All to just have scenes with each other to be funny.
Yeah.
So, like this episode made me watch Strangelove, mm-hmm. I rented Mad World mm-hmm. almost immediately after seeing this episode.
On two VHS tapes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, as a film fan, I'm actually mad I saw it that way because it's filmed in CinemaScope, which means
so beautiful.
extra yeah. widescreen.
It's 2.35 to 1, right?
It's such a weird juxtaposition. There are so many like practical effects of like people nearly getting hurt in great yes. camera shots. And then it cuts to blue screen of celebrities and vehicles
yes.
that looks totally unconvincing
yeah,
and terrible.
There's multiple like that.
This was the era where it's like movies have to compete with TV, mm-hmm. so this is going to be a long ass movie in mm-hmm. CinemaScope with everyone yep. you've ever
with
heard about.
Every expensive thing you could be. Well, the 60s in American cinema were defined by not knowing what the fuck to do against television, and the directors of the 70s haven't started yet, so mm-hmm. they're just like, let's make Paint Your Wagon. Let's make
this was them, like when you talk about throwing ideas at the wall, this is every idea and
yeah,
every
pretty
person.
Much, yeah.
But it's full of so many hilarious yeah. scenes. Jonathan Winters destroying the garage.
It looks expensive. So
and the big T is the big W.
Yeah.
Jimmy Durante dies in the start of the film, mm. and he tells them, like, I buried all my money under a big W. And these few people who saw him die, they know where it is, and they're all like, we got to get to this W first in Hollywood mm-hmm. and get that money. And as they go, then more people start finding out until a bigger and bigger mob. But what they don't do is immediately shout out, everybody, it's yeah. under a big W.
Yeah,
but it's the secret.
Spencer Tracy's.
I gotta show you a bit from the trailer because yeah, there's so many people in this movie
from four continents. History Airlines jet lands in Los Angeles, launching the biggest entertainment airlift in motion picture history. The world's press, some 300 newsmen from four continents, arrive for the Hollywood premiere of Stanley Kramer's
Hey, Rudy's in this too. And
there was a certain amount of money buried down in this park. Now, I suggest that we quietly get into our cars, and then when we get down there, we dig up the money, providing that there is some money there.
There's only one way to figure it, and that is every man for himself.
It's a bunch of people running off to their own cars who race for the money. Spoken by Buddy Hackett, who we didn't yeah. even mention, and Mickey Rooney, who are also in the fucking yeah. film.
And Milton Berle.
It's crazy.
This episode uses the music from the movie
yes.
directly.
Yes.
It's not a sound like they actually use the theme or whatever song.
Yeah.
So I love
Beautiful.
I give the Simpsons writers a ton of credit for coming up with these old-timey words I don't know.
Ah.
But remember, they grew up with this trailer. And so, like, they grew up with this movie, they grew up in this time. And so, like, this film, this is a hyper-indulgent, I love old film trailers, but it's, like, 4.5 minutes long.
Yes.
And half of it is screaming out quotes from publications who I think have been dead for almost 100 years. let's see, but this is my favorite one. Not this one.
Wild and hilarious all the way. It's a mad, 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 mad world is everything its extravagant title suggests, says the New York Times. A wham-doodle, humdinger, stemwinder, said the New York World Telegram and Sun.
So the New York World Telegram and Sun, which sounds like the result of 700 mergers, called this movie a wham-doodle, humdinger, stemwinder.
It's a contrabulous it's a contrabulous fab-traption.
I have to hear this again. It makes me so happy.
New York Times. A wham-doodle, humdinger, stemwinder, said the
I would not like my stem winded tonight. I'm sorry.
So that sequence over this bit is from the destruction of yeah. the garage. And it was something, too, that I loved as a kid, seeing that Phil Silvers is in it. Now, I'll get to Phil Silvers in a second.
Yeah.
But Phil Silvers is... Top Cat stole Phil Silvers.
Yeah.
Like, Top Cat is Sergeant Bilko, mm-hmm. 100%. And including his sidekicks... The guys who voice his sidekicks, two of them are the attendants at the place. And I just, as a kid, heard like, hey, wait, that's the pudgy cat who's with Fat, with Top
Cat. Yeah, you have the basis and the ripoffs doing scenes with one another.
Yes, it's
and
beautiful.
It's what I've always found this hilarious.
Phil Silvers is so fucking
before
funny.
I knew the source material.
Yeah.
This is like in the middle
anyway.
Of the sequence, it's just Bart waving to a guy freaking out in
yes.
a car.
And great animation on this, too.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you, kid? You told me the stream was shallow. Are you? Oh, kid. I'm kidding with you.
So
the most direct reference.
I have that scene.
I have the scene. Oh, okay, I got the scene. I got the scene as well. But it just, of course, it's a fucking 1950s movie, so this sequence takes like 45 minutes to occur.
It's no Aquacard.
But it's a kid coaxing a guy like, yeah, it's shallow enough, just drive across. And it's Phil Silvers. And hearing this right after watching this made me laugh for like two fucking hours.
It's too deep! It's too deep, you little rat fink! Why didn't you tell me it was deep? Why do I... Don't stand there! Get somebody! Don't... This is no place for a convertible!
It's no place for a convertible!
He's saying that right to the camera, and... I mean, I was watching this episode with good headphones on for once, and the music is just delightful.
Yeah, it's
just, like, so great.
It's Phil Silvers is—he's the best, is the sketchiest guy in the group. That he finds Jonathan Winters, who then tells him about the Big W, and so then all he does is trick multiple people into like, oh well, of course we'll work together to get that money. Hey, would you just throw your bike over there real quick, and then you can get in the car.
He has just basically killed Don Knotts.
Yes, he's like, Don Knotts. Do you see that? It's a police helicopter. Of course, that's what they use. What do you mean they?
What do you mean they?
They're great together too. It's amazing.
It's a little slice of wonderful, and I don't know. I'm happy to bring it up because if you give a fuck about old Hollywood or famous comedians before we were born, this is the most of them that have ever
been
assembled.
I will watch
and that Ethel Merman is really funny.
Get
in it too.
Really high.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
that.
Like, when I was reading about this on Wikipedia, I was like, I feel bad I never watched this, and I was like, original cut was 210 minutes? Dear Lord!
Yes.
That's like almost 4 hours.
I remember, I would
There's
use it,
an intermission.
I would use it a lot.
There better be.
What was that version of charades we'd play in a pool where we have to give an
Marco Polo.
Abbreviation of the name,
oh,
and like,
no, sorry.
You'll never get this. it's six M's in a row.
So, and they draw in the characters. You will see Milton Berle in the background. You will see Buddy Hackett. Mm-hmm. You'll see Phil Silvers. Even after he drowned, you'll see Phil Silvers looking at the camera and smiling behind Homer. And
as well as Lionel Hutz, who never talks.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And then at the ending, I always... Well, I don't. I wonder if you got the clip, but I always think of this line.
It's just a piece of paper.
It's mine! Rightfully sorry, but there is no hidden treasure. I have already used this time to escape from your jail. Fondest wishes. Oh, I can't make out the signature.
Keep digging. We're bound to find something.
Dig up stupid, I'm
Dig
sure.
Dig up stupid is my favorite. Mm-hmm. It is a great way to explain getting out of a problem the wrong
Dig
way.
Dig up stupid.
Thinking like, boy, I really dug a hole for myself. Like, how do I get out? Dig up stupid, meaning make more mistakes. Yeah. Keep digging that hole
deeper. Start your own Patreon.
You'll end up digging your way out.
It's funny to see Marge's in that hole because I feel like she would be sensible enough to say, let's stop this.
That was my exact note, too.
10 feet in, she would have said, okay, it's not there.
But I like it.
It's a good idea.
Every single Springfieldian being as stupid as the next.
Yeah.
It's great.
And they're all going there like in different ways. Like Barney is in a biplane with Patty and Selma,
which
is great.
That's how that's all the conveyances are from it, too. The motorcycle with a sidecar, the plane. That was fun, ladies.
Yeah.
All the stuff is in there. I'm telling you, it's a great movie. It
Maybe
really
I will eventually
I am not
see
vouching
it.
For it on that
Well,
sense,
I'm not going to say great. Good movie. And
but Bob will have a blast with it. I'm not recommending it.
I have to set aside an entire afternoon to watch it.
No, I just... You care because you know who these people are.
Oh, yeah,
most
I know
of the people
who all
are.
Them
are
yeah.
And, like, this is... They I don't know if there's been a film that assembled this many people.
Rat Race, once again.
It's seven. It's seven people.
Yeah, that's true.
Around John Cleese.
That is true. He's in that movie.
No movie has spent as much money on getting all these comedians in one place.
It's insane. And it's like, it's a swan song for some of them.
Yeah.
This is a fun, goofy episode. And for some reason, going into this, I felt like the mad world stuff was a huge part of it. But going back, I was like, no, it's like
a
minute. It's a minute of this episode.
It's so powerful at the end.
Yeah.
But on the Dragnet ending from Marge and the Lamb, it is the more indulgent of the parodies.
It is, yeah.
Especially because, like, I didn't fucking get this when it.
Oh yeah,
when I saw it.
It
on
made
TV.
No sense to me as a 10-year-old, but or 11-year-old at this point. If you're following Henry's age along with the show,
it was still funny though.
Yeah, it was.
It still came
funny.
Off as a wham doodle humdinger.
Yeah, a real stem twister.
Stem
wonker. This is a very hilarious episode that. If you wanted to like pick apart the story, like it kind of falls apart in the third act.
It's kind of doesn't really track super well.
Yeah, but who
it
cares?
It works really
it's
well
so
as a cartoon.
Fucking funny.
Yeah, they're having more fun, I think, with just kind of being all over the place, but still telling really good jokes.
Mm-hmm. I really like this episode. Want more like it.
So thank you so much for listening. I have been your host for this episode of Talking Simpsons. My name is Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, B-O-B-S-E-R-V-O. I also write about video games and occasionally anime for fandom at fandom.com. And I also do a comedy article every other Thursday for somethingawful.com. And my other podcast is Retronauts every Monday at Retronauts.com, or just search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. Every week we bring you a new episode about classic games. If you want to get into the podcast, think of a game that you like. We've probably done an episode about it, and listen to that episode, and I guarantee you will like it, especially if it's our Bart versus the Space Mutants episode or our Celebrity Games episode where Chris and Henry are both on it doing our regular goof 'em ups as we usually do in Talking Simpsons. Anybody else? What do you do?
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter is where you can follow me, and that's also where updates when a new episode goes live comes from, so follow me there, and you can see my work on fandom.com as well. And also, you know, let me tell you that you should give us reviews on iTunes. We always love new reviews on iTunes, so if you can't support us other ways, at the very least, give us an iTunes review. But if you want to give us a little more support, say $5 a month, there's a great place to do that, patreon.com/lasertime. This is a fan-funded show, and all the even $5 a month will help us out and keep this show going. This show exists because of the success of Patreon, and as I say every time, and you got to hear it again, the entire first season and the seasons 2, 3, and 4 wrap-ups are all there, all yours for just $5 a month, along with hundreds of hours of more content.
That's very nice of Henry, because he doesn't receive any of the Patreon money. It's me and the other guys, but it helps keep the equipment, the hosting up.
This studio exists because of that.
It is, and if you feel like it's not your responsibility... A lot of people feel that way, and it's got to be someone's responsibility, or we can't keep it up. I'm not complaining. Not rich, but not poor. It's just great, and we try and make it worth your while to join up and help support us. And you can find a bunch of more stuff there and on LaserTimePodcast.com. If you like how deep a dive we take in some of the jokes, LaserTime, we recently examined who is the tallest movie monster. We looked at the entire history of the Power Rangers, where they come from, and how many iterations there have been in America and Australia. Oh. If you look at LaserTimePodcast.com, click on LaserTime, see a picture of Seymour Skinner, who inspired our Out of Touch quiz. Do you not like Five Nights at Freddy's, Big Bang Theory, and Madea movies? I don't know them either, but we all quizzed ourselves by how little we know about these Titanic franchises to embarrass ourselves.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week when Bart visits the Box Factory, everybody.
Oh, my God.
My show's a box.
Infotainment.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.